Good afternoon. You're tuned to 98.7 FM WFMT Chicago, online at WFMT.com. I'm Suzanne Ernst. Delighted to say we have the superstar, the blonde bombshell, Joyce DiDonato, live in our WFMT studios for an impromptu. And this impromptu on 98.7 WFMT is supported in part by a grant from the Elizabeth F. Cheney Foundation, a Chicago-based philanthropy dedicated to arts and culture, and by generous contributions from members of WFMT's Fine Arts Circle. If you enjoy this live performance, please consider joining the Fine Arts Circle yourself. You can become a WFMT member right now by pledging online at WFMT.com. And now we go live to our studios for an impromptu hosted by Carrie Frumpkin.
Thank you, Suzanne. For the first time in about 25 years, Lyric Opera of Chicago is staging Mozart's opera seria La Clemenza di Tito, and it will continue through March 23rd. The role of Sesto in that David McVicker production is being sung by one of the great mezzos of our time, Joyce DiDonato, and she is here with us this afternoon with pianist Maureen Zoltek. Miss DiDonato will sing for us one of her two remarkable arias from Clemenza and more. She's chosen to begin with three of the Canciones Clásicas Españolas by the 20th century Spanish composer Fernando Obradors. These songs, several volumes of which were published in the 1920s, sought to evoke Spain's glorious musical past through a reverent and straightforward approach to folk material. They are love songs, and we will hear three of them. They are To Love, and the text reads briefly, "Love, give me countless kisses, your hands in my hair, 1,100 of them, another 1,100 of them, and then thousands more. And so that no one will know, we'll forget counting and start all over again." The next song, O Heart. O Heart, why lie awake through nights made for love when your mistress is lying in the arms of another lover? And the last song, From the Softest Hair. From the softest hair which you wear in braids, I shall make a chain to draw you to my side. Darling, I would like to be a jug in your house so that I could kiss your mouth whenever you drink. Here are Joyce DiDonato and pianist Maureen Zoltek in music by Obradors.
Oh,
Three love songs by Obradors, sung by Joyce DiDonato with Maureen Zoltek at the piano. And I swear, even if I had no idea what you were singing about, I mean, in terms of knowing the text, I'd be able to figure it out by just watching you.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that's really what it should be about, shouldn't it?
I think so. I think it's one of the reasons I love what I do so much is it's storytelling. I mean, we in the opera world and in the classical music world, we put all this weight onto it because it is such an elevated art form. And I love that part. You know, there's such intellectual stimulation. We're connected across centuries by this music. But at the end of the day, we're just telling stories, trying to understand each other, trying to find a way to express what is often unexpressible in our everyday poor vocabulary. So it's a joy to do that.
I think one of the things that's so remarkable about you is that you seem to be constantly growing. Even if you've sung a part before, whenever you come back to it, there's something new to see there. And that must be something to strive for as well.
Well, I'll tell you, at times, the frustrating part of being an opera singer, classical singer, and at other times, more often than not, the most exhilarating part, because you're forced to be a lifelong student. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now here in Chicago, in this world of Clemenza di Tito, you're dealing with one of the great texts of all time, the Metastasio. You're dealing with this story of Roman conflict and power seen through the lens of the Age of Enlightenment and Mozart with all his genius. And we get to go and look at our lives here in the 21st century and go, oh my goodness, this is still happening today. Jealousy and that thirst for power and completely being pulled in the wrong direction and knowing it and you can't stop it. I mean, we haven't figured it out yet.
Right.
So yes, I'm still studying as an opera singer, but I think humanity is still studying as well.
Well, I think you've just answered part of this question, but I was going to ask you why you tweeted out when you first arrived and started doing Clemenza, "God, I love this opera," and it's clear that you do. But Sesto, this has got to be a really complicated role, I would think.
Matthew and I were walking backstage last night after his big aria. So I have what I will perform here, the second act aria, De Per Questo, and then Matthew has his big sort of call out to the gods. And we both were walking back sort of like zombies backstage, and we thought, thank goodness there's only one more scene, because to hold all of that angst, and for him it's this rage, and for me it's complete desolation and desperation. Even though our job is not to feel this, our job is to convey it right on the stage so the audience can feel it, you can't help but take on that energy and feel it, and it's completely exhausting. I feel like I've run a marathon after it. But they're so human, these characters. True. And I think that's why I love it so much, because Sesto's vulnerability and strength and fight and repulsion of himself, of what he knows he shouldn't be doing, but he can't help it, it's so human. I mean, interestingly enough, it's not a lovely thing to say, but the tragedy of Philip Seymour Hoffman and his death was really when it happened, right when I was coming here. And I, in a way, see him as Sesto. You know, he was pulled into this addiction and thing. And I think people who have this drug addiction, or in this case, this Vitalia addiction, there's a part of you that's repulsed at yourself. I know better. I should do better. I know not to do this. And yet you can't. And it's a tragedy of the greatest proportions.
Right. In the first part of the opera, when you have the first aria, he's very much overwhelmed by all this, and he's, you know, just in Vitalia's orbit. But in the second aria, the one you're going to do for us from the second act, this is where he really finds out what's important to him, and it's a very important turning point, I think, in the plot for him.
It is. He has looked at his betrayal. He keeps saying, traditor, I'm a traitor, He's a traitor to his country. He's a traitor, more importantly, to himself, and most importantly, perhaps, to Tito.
Right.
Or maybe those last two are reversed, I'm not sure. And it's this idea where he takes as full responsibility as he can. He still cannot give up Vitalia.
Right.
Because he really does love her. As much of a drug as she is to him, he still loves her. And so he still is loyal to her in the end, even at Tito's bequest. Just tell me why. We can find a way. I mean, Tito is also committing treason by saying, look, I won't tell the Senate. This will just be between us. All I need to know is why. Isn't that when you're betrayed by somebody, what you think will appease the pain is knowing the reason? I don't know that it will. They still did it. They still made a choice. But at that point, even Sesto cannot even give that to him. And it's why he says in this aria, he says, I'm ready to face death. That doesn't scare me.
Right.
What tortures me is the thought of you knowing that I betrayed you.
Right. And, you know, he also pleads with him, really, can we just forget this one moment, this one betrayal, and get past it?
And if you could only see my heart.
Your heart, right.
That's his way of saying, help me through this. Because he has nobody to turn to. Sesto doesn't. There's nobody he can confide in that will understand this.
Right.
And so these two men who love each other deeply are completely separate in their quest to get through the situation.
Now, from a maybe technical standpoint, what does it take to bring all that across in the aria?
Well, okay, a lot of the work is done by Metastasio in this gorgeous text. A lot of the work is done by Mozart. You know, he has this way of telling you what the character is feeling in the orchestration, and today in the piano by wonderful Maureen. what precedes this is one of the greatest scenes I think I've ever played on stage, this recitative. And David McVicar really prompted Matthew and I to go for it as if this was Hamlet.
And we should point out that the recitatives are really as important, in some cases more important, than the arias.
The aria cannot exist without the recit. Right. So sometimes people look at opera seria and go, oh, there's so much recit. And it's like, without the recit, the aria could not happen.
Right.
Or the duet. It's imperative because it gives us the chance to reflect on all this action that has just happened. And so it's quite actually a violent recitative where you've got two men, testosterone is blazing, and it is the most important moment of their life because they're both so lost and so distraught. And we really play that. And so as Sesto, of course, I'm feeling all this, but Joyce, the singer, the heart is pounding. I'm a little out of breath. I'm feeling all this. And all of a sudden, thank goodness, I don't know, was it 12 measures of music, of intro? 8, 12? I only get 5 measures. Ooh, thank goodness it's slow. It feels longer. That's the chance where technically I, the performer, have to go. I have to get this deep breath. I have to release in my lower back. I have to actually make sure the breath is going quite deep. And I have to make the heart rate slow down by just kind of sort of yoga-ish. You know, I have to really go to the breath. And that first phrase, which could not be more exposed, everything has to be steady as a rock. But my whole body, the whole kinesthology, what's the word? Thank you. This is why we have an audience here. I can think of the Italian word. I can't find it in English. I have to command my body at that point, even though it's off on another rail. And so I do that by concentrating on the breath and really saying those first few words. I don't think about singing. If I think about singing, my voice will start shaking and I'll go, oh, it's not there. It's not steady. No, breath and text, and that's it. And then once I get through that first phrase, then the body starts going, oh, yes, this is what I need to do.
Will you do it for us now?
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. questo cor.
How could Tito not be moved by that?
Ah. That's what makes it hard. That's what makes it hard.
That's great. After hearing that, I think I should probably tell people about getting tickets. Because you'll certainly want to see and hear this at Lyric Opera through March 23rd. The number to call is 312-332-2244 or go to lyricopera.org. Clearly not to be missed. Your relationship with your audiences has always been quite an amazing thing. Whether it be a quite remarkable blog that you do, one of the most entertaining I've ever read, or the fact that your new compact disc was literally produced by your fans. Rejoice is the name of it.
Yes, we've got one of our producers in the audience today, actually.
We
Hi,
do.
Pal. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about how that all came about and what you decided to do.
Well, my lovely record company used to be EMI and is now Warner Classics. It was sort of time to put together a compilation portrait disc. I'd been with them for 10 years. And I don't know, nowadays, you know, everybody's doom and gloom about the recording industry. I think it's alive and well, and so much music, fabulous music is coming out. It's just slightly different these days than in the golden age. I think we're in our own golden age, but that's just my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. Every age is golden. And I thought in today's day and age, it's a little bit tricky to generate excitement about sort of a greatest hits album. And I thought, gosh, you know, I hate if, like, this may sound contradictory, but I hate if too much attention is put on me. Funny enough, because, like, I chose a career that's in the spotlight, but it's I love it when it's not so much about me. And I thought, you know, the only reason I've been around for 10 years recording discs is because people are listening to them and buying them. Mm-hmm. So thank you. But I really wanted to make it interactive. And so I just thought, let's just have you guys produce this. And I tell you, I had no idea what was going to happen, but it ended up being an extraordinary adventure because the fans chose the title, Rejoice, which I actually didn't like because I didn't want my name on it, but they loved it. And so I went with it. And in the end, it was the right thing. They chose the track listing. I have a wonderful fan from Munich who took the cover photo from one of my concerts, and we put that on the cover. I mean, that's kind of amazing. Yeah. And many fans sent in pictures and little sound bites about what music means to them, and that's the content of the CD booklet. And I really think it's a celebration of what classical music still means to people. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those people that hardly believes that it's a dying art form. I think it's here because people need it. I think we have to do a better job selling that to the audience, and part of the key to that is to stop telling people that it's dying, because then right. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. I just think we have to get really creative.
Yeah.
And so that's been part of my thing. I get tired if I'm in the confines of rules too much.
Right.
So I like to sort of break tradition every now and then.
Well, another thing you do, and that's clear from just what we've heard this afternoon, is really communicate with your audience. Mm-hmm. You make sure that there's a connection there. They know what you're about, how you feel about what you're performing, and how you feel about them, for that matter.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why it really works.
Well, I tell you, maybe it's just completely selfish on my part, because my fear is to stand up on stage and feel stupid. And I figure if I'm just up vocalizing, you know, I mean, what more banal thing is there?
Right.
That who wants that? So I think it's really it's what makes my blood pulse a little bit harder,
yeah,
is that sense of connecting with people.
Well, one of the ways to connect is, of course, to sing songs which people know very, very well, and you're about to do that for us now. You're going to sing Danny Boy.
Yes.
And tell us about your approach to this song, which everyone knows and everyone has sung.
My approach is a little bit of awe and reverence, and then I have to forget that, because then I wouldn't be able to sing it very well. I was born Joyce Flaherty. I'm a good old Irish girl from Kansas City. My mother was Kathleen Clare McGlinchey. I mean, I'm really as... Don't tell anyone, but I don't have a Mediterranean cell in my body. Although my heart is full of it. I must have been, you know, Mediterranean in another life or something. But so this was the song growing up in my household. And, you know, my mom would get out the Kleenex every time it came on. And,
yeah.
And I just never thought I could ever touch it. And then first time I ever sang it publicly was for about 4 million people in September. I sang for the last night of the proms in London. And they arranged, Chris Hazel did a wonderful new arrangement for it. And I premiered my version of it in front of 4 million people. Luckily now there's 15 million people listening to WFMT across the world, I'm sure, and on the internet. Hello! So I'll break my record now, maybe.
All right.
But this is Danny Boy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is you must go, and I must bow.
Joyce, did you know that the very first popular recording of that was made by a contralto by the name of Ernestine Schumann-Heink?
I did know that.
And,
no, I'm totally lying. I did not.
Well,
I totally did not know
that.
I mean,
here's something else that you have in common with that song. I mean, that was, you know, she was a great operatic contralto, a German-born operatic contralto who actually came to this country for part of her career. And she was very much attracted to that song and recorded it for the one of the first times it was ever recorded.
Wow. Any idea of the year?
Must have been in, I want to say the 1930s, somewhere around there. Maybe earlier than that.
I hear it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway.
I wonder if it was heavily accented, if she was German. That would be kind of fun
well,
to hear.
Well, she spent a number of years here, too, so I don't really know. But anyway, speaking of songs which everyone loves and must sing, even if you're not from Kansas, Over the Rainbow, yeah. You've chosen to do for us, the amazing song from The Wizard of Oz. And, I mean, here's a song, in fact, you choose to end your CD, Rejoice, with this song, and I think it's very appropriate somehow, because it's about longing and optimism and being open to what the future may hold, and that's yeah. certainly what you've always been in your career. And, well, tell us about your feelings toward this song.
Well, it's funny. When I was growing up, and the final line is, if happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why can't I? And my interpretation then was like, why can't I do that? And it was quite sort of a pessimistic or helpless way of looking at it. And it wasn't until I actually sung the piece and actually uttered those words that it was like, actually, why can't I
exactly
do that? And so it's interesting. I mean, this is the interpretation of song. Everybody, hopefully all of you listening too, will have your own take on it. One of the reasons I do, I perform it a lot now. I end recitals oftentimes with it. The special thing about the Rejoice CD is that it's with the Kansas City Symphony, my hometown symphony,
right.
who are just going like gangbusters out there in Kansas City in our new performing arts center, the Kauffman Center, is, you know, I think as a society, I'll speak for America. Okay, this is dangerous territory, so forgive me. Just give me a little bit of leeway here. But, you know, it's a bit contentious these days. And I think everybody's buying the idea of what we're being fed all the time, that things are terrible. Things are awful. Oh, it's never been so bad. We've got the economy, we've got the Republicans and the Democrats and the government and the schools and the education, and it's all so awful. But, you know, I'm not going to say that that's all wrong, but I believe there is great power in looking at the other side of things and seeing the incredible beauty that is around. I mean, how many of us know a school teacher that is in a terrible school and against all odds, and they're doing amazing work with children, mm-hmm. changing lives? That's what I prefer to concentrate on, because I will bet that there is infinitely more positive stories in the world than negative right now. I'm not saying the negative doesn't exist. I'm not naive. But I prefer to really shine a light on that. And somewhere over the rainbow, I don't know, is there a more naive song or innocent song in the world? Maybe a few. When you wish upon a star, make no difference where you are. There's some out there, but I sort of don't apologize anymore for putting that out there. And I'll let people decide what they want about it, but I just don't think you can go wrong with this idea of don't forget to dream. Don't forget to dare to dream. That's the line in this piece that I love so much. And, you know, yeah, other people do it. Why can't you? Start telling yourself a different story or start playing a different soundtrack in your head. You might just end up with a different result.
Thank you for coming to see us this afternoon. And I know this audience here of supporters of WFMT is very appreciative. And what a perfect way to end.
Thank you. Can I also just say thank you to all of you? You guys are the ones who, I know, you're the first ones to call when that telethon starts, right?
Yeah. And most of them call many times as well.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. Because, you know, you're helping bring beauty into the world as well with this music station. And that is greatly, greatly appreciated. So this is for you.
Let's fly.
I'm sure I'm not the first to notice a parallel between young Dorothy and young Joyce from Kansas, finding great satisfaction and knowledge by following their dreams and taking us along as well. So thank you so very much, Joyce DiDonato and Maureen Zoltek. Thanks also to Louise Frank, who produces these impromptus, and to Mary Mazurek for music production. If you'd like to see Joyce DiDonato in Lyric Opera's acclaimed production of La Clemenza di Tito, you have until March 23rd. Either call 312-332-2244 or go to the Lyric website for tickets, and the website is www.lyricopera.org. That's it from the Levin Performance Studio. Back to you, Suzanne.
Thank you so much, Carrie. This impromptu on 98.7 WFMT is supported in part by a grant from the Elizabeth F. Cheney Foundation, a Chicago-based philanthropy dedicated to arts and culture. Also by generous contributions from members of WFMT's Fine Arts Circle. If you enjoyed this live performance, please consider joining the Fine Arts Circle yourself. You can easily become a WFMT member right now by pledging online at WFMT.com.